Welcome to our first attempt at a podcast called Faith and Hustle. My name is Garrett Baker.
I'm Brian Hollingsworth.
And I'm Sean Bryan.
And we're going to figure this thing out.
One step at a time.
One step at a time.
All right, we're back. Thank you for joining us for episode two. We're going to try to take an opportunity to get to know each one of the hosts over the next three episodes. So I think it'll be entertaining. Definitely entertaining the little bit of precursor conversation we've had leading up to this. So I believe today we're going to start with Garrett. Tell us about yourself. Introduce yourself to the world of Southwest Louisiana and anybody else that'll join in on the interweb.
Well, my name is Garrett Baker. I was born in Lafayette, Louisiana, and lived in Patterson, Louisiana until I was 11 years old. My pops got a promotion and got moved to Liberty, Texas, like right outside of Houston. So he bought a house somewhere around Humble. And it was a cool place, but it was too big for me. So I made some mistakes in life, and there was a lot of distractions there. So I ended up back in Lake Charles. I graduated from the finest learning institution west of the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what that is.
LaGrange High School.
Go Gators. You
know, yeah, LG, what your mama like. But from that point, made some more terrible decisions. Got me in some binds in life, right? And it was all part of God's plan. Like, as soon as I graduated high school, I got into the industry I work in, which is industrial coatings. One of my best friend's dad got me a job. Thought it was the dumbest, most mundane job I could have. I didn't see a future in it. I was literally shoveling dirt, like, off of concrete, putting it in a wheelbarrow and going drop it on something, you know. In my mind, I just thought that I was better than this, but in my heart, I didn't believe it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was the struggle.
I mean, I can't believe they'd make an Irishman, you know, just do manual labor that, you know.
That's why we got these shoulders. We're built for that.
Oh, okay. I thought
you
so.
Know? Like, hey.
Fellow Irishman over here.
Yeah. I got a bunch of – it must have been tough being an Irishman and growing up. In South Louisiana.
My dad's from New York, so it was always, my dad had a different outlook on life. So some of the stuff that I encountered, I would go back and ask, like, hey, what is this, you know? And he's like, hey, those dudes are idiots. So I grew up with these, I guess, two different perspectives of what, you know, society should look like or anything like that. So I didn't have a whole lot of white friends at a certain point in my life. You know, it's crazy. If you would have told me that I would be doing something like this with two other white guys, I was 20 years ago, I'd be like, yeah, right.
Man, I got a little tan on me, man.
No, but it was just, it was a different, my dad had a different, he approached life differently. You know, he was a cool cat. But, he was a perfect example for me, though, because there were certain limitations that he set up on himself and his business life, and he was like, well, I maxed out here.
All right, so what kind of business did he have? I'm curious.
Well, he worked in the oil field.
Okay.
Yeah. So, he thought because he wasn't educated or, you know, that he could only do this. You know, and this is
so as it was self limitations.
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%. It was self limitations, and I seen those, and I hated it. You know, and I honestly was like, man, I will not be that guy. Working man's a sucker because, like, you know, like from Bronx Tale.
Yeah, I was about to say that's some mob movie I saw the other day.
That's like what.
So then you start playing dice and throwing up against the wall.
No, no. I mean, there was dice. There was plenty of dice games and things like that. But no, it just was. It was a different upbringing because I did see my dad. My mama was a teacher. She taught special education at LeGrand. So, you know, she knew how to deal with me. You know, no.
Was not going to make that joke.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, so.
So she always told you were special, right?
Yeah, yeah. My special little boy. Nah, but it was, There's just a unique upbringing, you know.
So your dad's, you know, self-limitation he put on himself, man, that really rubbed you the wrong way and kind of give you your first, almost motivation to, hey, man, I'm going to do something in business.
Yeah, different. Yeah, I'm going to be different than this guy. Like, hey, there's nothing that somebody could tell me that I can't do. So if I got it in my mind, I'm going to figure it out, you know.
So I know the answer to this, but I have to ask it. So, you know, that mindset is very similar to a lot of entrepreneurs that I know. You know, hey, I mean, somebody else did it. Why not me? Somebody else opened up a burger joint. Why can't I open up a burger joint?
Yeah.
Somebody else was a real estate tycoon. Why can't I be one? You know, I think that risk taking, you know, attitude is something that a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, have. Is that something you think you developed from an early age? You know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, except the product that I invested in at an early age was had a high, you know, a quick and significant return on investment, but there was a lot of risk involved with just, you know, peddling it.
So it was almost too much risk. The risk was not worth the reward, is what you're saying. And you learned that, you know,
the hard way. Yeah, I did.
So you weren't selling cupcakes.
I was not selling cupcakes. I was not selling cupcakes. But no. So,
but I would guess some of the entrepreneurial, you know, just principles there probably still, you know, stick with you to today. You know, when you see different things.
Oh, absolutely. It did. I mean, it's the fundamentals. You know, like. The business is business. It's an exchange of goods or a service, right? Mm-hmm. So, and when you have the goods, you still have to service people. You can't be disrespectful. You can't be, you know, because you want them to come back, you know?
Yeah, you still got to have good customer service.
Yeah, yeah, you want them to be loyal to you and all that jazz. So, yeah, I mean, the as crazy as it sounds, like that's where that's my foundation for business and I guess being an entrepreneur. But
so was the motivation to prove to yourself, to prove to dad, or was it something different? Was it to
There was some self limitations.
You just wanted to make some money. I just want some stuff.
Well, that was I was misguided at a young age. People would ask me what I wanted to be and I'd say rich. You know, and now that I know that rich is a vague term,
mm-hmm.
You know, like rich how, you know, like.
Yeah, we all have different definitions of
rich
and there's more than just rich and, you know, and money and what have you. You can be rich in power. You know,
I worshiped the money at that time, though.
Yeah.
I really did.
It's funny, the love of money is, you know, it talks about that being evil. You know, the Bible talks about being prosperous all the time. But we always think being prosperous, oh, that's the love of money. Oh, no, that's what God wants for you. But he doesn't want what you had, which was the love and the worship of it.
I worshiped money. Like, I thought it was the end-all, be-all. It would solve all of my problems. And in reality, for a little while, it did, you mm-hmm. know. And then once you get to a certain level of that, like, you see everything change and the money's not about it. You know, like the money just, it's there and you're looking at it. And you're like, man, there's gotta be more to life than this right here. You know? Cause I thought you set a goal when you're a young hustler, like when you're a young street kid, mm-hmm. it's always like, I want to get to 5,000. Right. So you get to 5,000.
You're rich at 5,000.
Yeah, yeah. Especially when you're 17, 18
that's
years
right.
old.
Yeah, no doubt.
So then you're like, all right, I'm at 5. Let's get to 10, right? And then you get to 10, it's like, well, I think I can get to 50. And then you get to 50. And then you're like, all right, I'm going to get to 100. And then next thing you know, you're at 100,000. And then you're like, well, I can get to, you know, and it just keeps snowballing. Your goal keeps changing. And that's really what business is, and that's what growth is, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was just misguided. It wasn't. But I sat there and I felt empty because it's the loneliest feeling in the world is being a successful criminal, because I can't run around and tell everybody about my exploits.
The more money you have, almost the more anxiety and the more problems on what to do. You were probably happier when you hit your $10,000 mark than when you hit your $100,000 mark.
Yeah.
There's a great philosopher said, the more money we more money we have, the more problems. Money,
more problems.
Yeah.
99 problems.
Yeah. No, it was I'll never forget, I was exhausted and I was looking for a different direction to go in, and something happened one day. I was at a Lake Charles Music, at a music studio, and there's people there that could witness it. There was a guy that was like, "Hey man, you like to do music, why don't you like do music?" I said, "Man, I'm making more money than all these rappers out here right now, you know, especially the rapper in Lake Charles, you know, because they wasn't making no money."
No, I don't know many famous rappers from Lake Charles.
So it was like, I really did. I was like, man, it's just not profitable, you know? And so I'll never forget, it was a Friday. I said, you know what? If God wants me to do this music stuff, he'll take all this dope away from me, you know? And as luck would have it, I said that on a Friday. On a Monday, they came and raided. And
it's not what you were hoping for.
No. So
an answer to prayer.
But at this
here
time,
comes the popo.
Yeah. No, my faith was so shaky at that time too. Like I really didn't have a whole lot of faith.
So yeah, that's a good point, man. When you talk about your faith there, talk about, you know, did you have a salvation experience at this time and you were kind of backsliding? So what was that like?
Well, there wasn't no backsliding. I never got into it.
Okay. Like, so tell us about that.
Yeah. I got uprooted. I'm sitting in a camp CCC.
Okay.
Not Camp Pearl, but you know, and man, it was just one of those nights, man. Like I'm sitting there and I'm waiting on some things to move for me. And
how old are you?
At that time, I think I'm 21, 22.
Okay.
And go to bed, hear this voice, because when you get there, you know. You don't have all kinds of luxuries, so you have a toothbrush and they give you a little Bible. But like something spoke to me, not something, like God spoke to me. It was like, hey, open up your Bible to, I believe it was John 13:1. It was something about washing feet and stuff like that. And I ain't washing anybody's feet, you know. But it's crazy how God will give you a word and then reveal the meaning of that word to you as you mature in your walk. But I knew from that moment that something crazy was going to happen. So then I bonded out. And first thing I did when I bonded out, I went paid my lawyer. And he asked me what I was going to do that night. And we could bring him here and he could tell you what I told him. I was like, I'm going to church. He said, man, everybody gets in trouble. They start believing in God. I was like, and he made a joke.
Yeah.
So this is, something's different. So I did. I went to church, and there was this lady. It was a little church right down the road, right across from South Bowl.
Some good old country folk right there. Yes. They will pray Jesus right into you.
Well, that's what,
and I'm guessing at this time you were still wearing cowboy boots, Wranglers.
Oh, no, I was not. I was not. I definitely was not.
So, you were a picture of the rural church.
Yeah.
So you were a little bit odd.
I bet you. Yeah, awkward. I bet he had a good fit on.
Yeah.
He's always.
Yeah, no, I was dressed
nice. Baker always looks good, man.
So I go in this church, and there happened to be an evangelist there that night that didn't know anything about my situation, and she gave me a word, and she told me that, you know, I prayed for the first time, and, you know, things were about to start changing in my life. I won't ever be able to go back to doing that, and, you know, that I'm not going to get in any trouble. And I was thinking, well, this woman's crazy. Like, my lawyer just told me that I'm screwed. Mm-hmm. But anyways, she asked me, do you receive this word? And without even understanding what I was saying, I just said it. Yes, ma'am, I received this word. So in receiving that word, man, I spoke a blessing on my life and didn't realize it. And that's when everything changed. Everything changed, like a complete, like, 360 in my approach to things. But I fought it. You know, I was still fighting it. I still wanted to be out. I still wanted to live life on my terms and not really adhere to what God had for me. So, you know, I went down this this winding road of losing everything that I had acquired through illicit means and starting from scratch and just all this doubt. And then, through that, I encounter my first mentor in life, like on a job site. I would get to work, I would do my job, but I would sit off in the corner and I would read books, and I would clown around sometimes, but there was very few people that I would interact with at work.
So when you say God continued to strip things away from you, which is common, I think, in a lot of our stories, man, like, seems like he's got to tear us all the way down just so he can kind of build us up the way he wants. There was no mentor, pastor, somebody there that was bringing you under your wing right after your salvation. You were just kind of floundering.
I was in the wilderness for a little while.
You were in the wilderness. Okay.
For a little while. And then I encountered this man. This guy, the irony of it all, and that's why I don't judge people. The man that became my first mentor, he was an atheist. That was the strangest thing, but he seen something in me, and he started to speak life in me, and then he was like, hey, you gotta go to school. So he worked out a deal with me that I could go to Suella and all that stuff, and while I was, he would pay me my 40 hours. I could leave early, I could do this, but I had to work harder on certain things, like lump sum jobs and stuff. And he would stack the money, and he would move the money around to pay for me while I wasn't there. So it was like, wow, this dude,
And he didn't have to. He didn't know you. Yeah. He wasn't a favorite of nobody.
No, I wasn't a favorite of anybody. Yeah. Actually, they were all kind of scared of me because I kind of had a ill temperament still at that time.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. I was very temperamental. I was like... I was quick to say things to disrespect people, not meaning to disrespect them, but just thinking I'm supposed to be honest. But sometimes you don't have to be brutally honest, and I'm still learning that to this day. So encountering him and someone telling me that hey, you're fit for something different, It was like, wow, I've dedicated this many years to this craft now, so what's God got for me? And
I can't believe God. It's funny how God will use an atheist, to speak life into his people. I think in the Old Testament, how many times has he used people that weren't even Christians to glorify a Christian man, or think of Nehemiah, and just there's countless ones. It's surprising to hear a modern day tale of that. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
No, he was a great man. And, he passed away. So that was a rough one. That was a hard hit. But after him, I ran into a dude that has forever changed my life. And, he's probably one of the most savvy and crafty business guys I've ever met in my life. He's the most humble human being I've ever encountered in my life. And I get to spend, I still to this day, I spend a lot of time with him. And one day he called me over to his house and he said, hey,
And so how'd you meet him?
Through my fraternity.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
That's right. I knew that.
Yeah. So he was like, hey, come to the house. So I'm sitting down and he said, look, man, in life, you got hands and you got business guys. Said, I don't think that you're a hand. I think that you should, focus on being a business guy. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I don't know. I'm a hand right now.
My paycheck says I'm a hand.
Yeah. So that's when he told me something that has stuck with me. It's the greatest quote. I tell people it all the time. And he said, that's what he told me. He said, G-Bank, everybody in this world has the right and should be successful, but all of them are looking for permission. So I give you permission to be successful. Mm.
Well, that's powerful.
It was. And that moment changed everything for me till I'm done on this planet. Because for a man of that stature to see something in me. And then we just started having these discussions, and it was always like these questions that he knew that I wasn't going to lie to him, but it was this, he was teaching me to go find the information for myself. First question he ever asked me in business was like, what's an asset and what's a liability? You know,
that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So
what's an asset and what's a liability?
That's a trick question. It depends on which business you're in. Sometimes your assets are your liabilities if you don't take care of the assets.
I had a banker tell me, liabilities move and assets don't.
Yeah. But I mean, but your asset can turn.
But that's a banker's perspective.
Yeah. So, that was the answer I actually gave him. I was like, because the business that, I love the business that I'm in. Like, I love coatings. I love stuff like that. I love the guys. It's just different. So, and it might be because I'm comfortable in it, right? So, but, my assets will be my liabilities if I don't take care of my assets. And in reality, mm-hmm. in the business I'm in, our biggest asset is people. It's like skilled, competent people.
Yeah, and I think most service industries are like that. Yeah, no question.
So I went back and gave him that answer, and he was like, well, all right, you ready? So it just became these conversations, man, that it molded and shaped me. And he would, when I was kind of veering off, he would rein me in.
So as this mentor is molding and shaping you and your business experiences, and you're probably having some successes and some failures, how did your faith and how your faith was growing during this time and having its ups and downs, how is it affecting your outlook on, you know, just entrepreneurship and leadership?
Man, so my faith was... It was solid. Like, my faith's solid. I one thing I don't have a problem with is loving God with all my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing I do have a problem with is trusting God with all my heart, because everybody,
you have a problem with trusting with everybody.
Everybody,
all the time. Everybody's out to get G-Bake. People out there right now, Garrett knows you're out to get him. I know this because I've been friends with this man for a long time. So he's got an eye on you, just so you know.
I'm watching.
Don't even try it.
Yeah. Why is his hand in his pocket for that long? Yeah.
Been following me for 3 miles down the interstate.
Yeah. Like, oh, thank God they turned left.
You know? That's perfect.
But no, it just, what was the question again?
No, just how your faith growing, how that it affect your thoughts on entrepreneurship and leadership. Well, did it help you grow? Did it inhibit you? I mean, how did it work?
Well, backtracking, right after I got in all that trouble, I started investing in the kingdom and doing what I was supposed to do.
So how old are you at this point? You're 21, 22 still, or you're moving on?
A little bit older than that.
Yeah, huh? when I really decided to make a change in my life, I was probably 25, 26.
Okay, and family's starting to enter the picture yet, or no?
I already had. My daughter was 7 at this time, and my son was born a year later. You know, he was kind of my reward for making the change. You know, I was like God was like, I'll give you a son, you know?
Yeah, so there's more than G-Bake to worry about.
Yeah. And it does. Yeah, so it changed my perspective. Well, it everything, like I started maturing spiritually and like mentally, you know? But I started paying my tithes at this, you know, and it was the coolest thing in the world, man, because And I tell people all the time, I don't want to go back to being broke. But some of the funnest times that me and my wife had, and it was when our life was so simple. You know, it was like hamburger helper. You know, which one? Are we going to eat the stroganoff? Or are we, you know?
Dude, y'all are high class. We was trying to see, are we going to do the chicken or the beef? Ramen noodles. You know?
Yeah, no. So it was, but it was just... there was no distractions, right? It was like, and there was a lot of time. There's a lot of peace in those moments, right? When you're figuring it all out and you're getting to this, and man, like when success comes, you got to be prepared because you're going to be busy and you got to figure out how to unplug, how to unwind, what is your outlet going to be? Like, you know, and sometimes, a lot of times I'm stuck in this phone or something like that. But no, so my faith with all that.
So your obedience with tithing And your growth as a Christian brought you to that obedience. How did that affect your professional life?
Well, God proved me, like, God proved himself to me through my obedience with my money so many times that it got to the point where I still to this day, when I make a move, I feel like I'm playing with the house's money. Like, I feel like, okay.
Oh, I love the way you said that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that. Because I wanted to ask this question, and I can't help it. I've heard this. I've been exposed to many, many different churches, religions, highly engaged with it. And I've heard this over and over again. When I started paying my tithes, things changed for me financially. When I started giving 10% of my income, which is God's to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, and then we started taking that, it really affected everything. And it doesn't matter what the religion is or the doctrine, rather, that principle seems to hold true. And it does today sitting here. I don't know you for 20 years, yeah. Right? And I don't know your background beyond what I'm learning right now. But with that being said, here's the hard question. This is going to get a little edgy. How much of that did you tithe because you knew God was going to take care of you? And
so,
is it like the more I put in, the more I get out?
No.
Or is it this is God's and his first?
It was because it was the rule, you know, like
what was the that's the motivation.
I had to kick up.
That's the easiest way, right?
Yeah.
The original motivation is Miss G-Bake
said
we gonna tithe whether you like it or not. Well,
so it was crazy.
That's my guess.
She had wanted to do that, and then like one day it was on my heart, and I was like, hey, you know, I think we need to start doing this. And she was like, I'm glad you said that, like, because we should have been doing this. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it was mutually agreed upon at that moment that from this day forward, we're going to. And it was reluctant at first. Like, I just knew it was a rule. And I know, like, so when that spirit of conviction falls on me, I'm going to try to beat it off of me. That pause. I shouldn't.
But don't edit that.
Yeah. What were you saying there, Jared?
Yeah, no, but
ratings just went up.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get this spirit of conviction off of me. Like, I don't want it, you know, initially. It might take, like, I might put myself through a storm until I finally just do what I know God wants me to do.
Oh, you're a 3-year-old child. Make no mistake.
Yeah.
But I think we all are.
Yeah. So, but I wasn't happy at first. I was like, man, this is so stupid. But I seen these little wins, like small wins or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned about giving with a joyful heart. And once I learned about giving with a joyful heart, that's when I seen exponential growth. And that's when I was like, take all my money if you want it, you know. And I tell people this to this day all the time. Like, if God spoke to me and said, give me everything you got. At first, I'm going to be, you know, he's going to have to tell me more than once. I'm going to be like, are you sure that's you, God? Like,
God, but, I know I heard you those three times, but I know a fourth time would really.
But he ain't going to say never. But typically, he's not going to require that of somebody that's a humble steward, because that's not what we're worshiping anymore, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm moving now in his will, right? Like, every move that I make, like, and sometimes I'm like, man, I don't want to stay in this situation. I want to go to this situation. But God doesn't want me there, because
so
I got to learn something.
I'm hearing a trend throughout 25, 26 minutes of your story, your life story, and kind of what got you here, that anytime you got in trouble, you obeyed God.
Yeah.
And it fixed the problem.
Yeah.
And obedience has been your salvation
100%.
Time and time again.
100%.
And I think that's completely admirable.
Yeah, 100%. That,
wow,
yeah.
That'll preach right there, man.
Yeah.
That'll preach obedience. We'll get you out of some difficult times.
It Mike can preach, but it's G-Bake's reality.
Well, I mean, it's definitely G-Bake's reality.
I never looked at it like that.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
It is. That is. I'm kind of dumbfounded right now, like, by, you know.
So, and look how hard you fought against obedience at times. I have to as well, but I just know.
I have rebel tattooed on my arm. Like, I prided myself on being rebellious and being, like, You know, I never wanted to exist in regular society.
Like, well, you literally just schooled us on how to be obedient.
Yeah, no.
So you're all your desire and your deep rooted. I want to be a rebel, and really, your obedience has been your salvation.
Yes, it's crazy. It's
I love it.
No,
it
well, is. I mean, we're wrapping up this podcast, but if there's anything to take away from this, that's really cool. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah. No, it is. It's been a cool journey.
Man, I appreciate you just being honest with Garrett. You've always been honest with us. You've been a truthful guy, and man, your story is a powerful one. And I know we're just getting the tip of the iceberg right now. I know there's a lot more to it, so I look forward to exploring it moving forward.
Absolutely incredible. I think it's wonderful, and really, really appreciate you sharing that with us and everybody listening. And really, I think there's not a better takeaway than just that right there. Obedience to God will push you over the finish line on every part of life.
And get you out of trouble, man.
Catch y'all next time.